Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Fed Ninjas. We have the pleasure of having Dylan Smith. Dylan Smith is a cybersecurity student at Utah State University. And of course, we have our founder of Fed Ninjas, Eric Adams. We are going to be discussing what can someone that is currently studying cybersecurity in college expect when they come out. That's going to be some fun. Dylan, is there anything you want to add to that?
No, let's hop right into it. I'm excited to be here. Nice to chat with you guys. I'm grateful for the invite and happy to ask all the questions that would definitely be beneficial for other cybersecurity students and myself. So happy to be here.
It's been a pleasure to be able to understand and get to know what you're doing over there. So, and on top of that, there's one other thing that I'm just going to throw that as a caveat. And that is Dylan is going to be fighting in his first MMA fight here. I know that has no relevance to cybersecurity, but that's just fine. Anyway, here we go. So
that meets the Fed Ninja standard, though, to be able to fight in an MMA fight. I think that is really cool.
Yeah.
So you've met the bar. Good.
So Dylan can protect you online or physically. So just reach out to Dylan.
Work on physical security.
Yes, I like it. Dylan, I know you've been speaking with a number of your fellow students over there, but also in some of your studies, there's been a number of questions that have come up, and I want to turn the floor over to you and get to ask our resident expert over there. So first question.
Okay, amazing. Well, yeah, so there was a couple. The first thing I wanted to speak about was entry-level positions when it comes to cybersecurity, because I've noticed a lot of where I've worked and with other experience from other of my colleagues, finding entry-level positions in cybersecurity specifically has been challenging. They've had to take roles that are adjacent to cybersecurity, more along the lines of like system administrator, other jobs that are IT, but not necessarily like IT security and things like that. So what would you recommend to look for jobs that are more specialized in the cybersecurity field in the entry level?
Yes. Maurice, I don't know if you're going to take that one or if I should, right?
No, I think it's 100% you. You're the
okay.
one.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm just messing with you. That is a fantastic question. Ultimately, I think a really good place to start out in cybersecurity really is as a security operations center analyst, because you get to see the dashboard of different attacks that are coming in or things that users are doing that maybe accidentally they shouldn't be doing, and ways to then help prevent those items from happening. And so you're able to see all of this telemetry data of the systems and the processes, and making sure that systems are available, that there's not things like denial of service attacks, the applications are running, looking at the different layers, working layers, operating system layers, application layers, to make sure everything is running correctly, and then looking for abnormalities or attack and understanding what those look like and validating false positives and thinking in the mind of an attacker to be able to say, okay, wow, yeah, we left this port open. You could exploit that and here's the damage you could do. So I think a security operations center analyst type of job is one of the best to start out in. Now, if those aren't available, I've actually heard from people say, wow, I graduated in security or wanted to go into security, and I ended up being an IT help desk person. But with my background, I was able to specialize and be able to really help in areas of cybersecurity. And so that could be an option also, is to talk to that hiring manager and say, hey, look, you know, I've got a specialty in cybersecurity. Could part of this role also grow into a little bit more in cybersecurity? And typically, you can find those opportunities, maybe not right away, but IT has a lot of responsibilities with ensuring security is conducted properly within the organization. And so I think it's a really good mesh into that. That's a good starting place. And then from there, typically you get pulled into projects. You get pulled into doing things like building systems, like, oh, by the way, we've got to rebuild this system, and here's kind of the script to be able to build it, or here's the configurations. And then you just get pulled into all sorts of projects. And that's what I saw when I started out at a very, very large computer company about almost 30 years ago now. That's what, you know, I started out just doing regular basic things. And then I saw projects that were that I was able to basically volunteer for and use any extra time to work on those. And that's how I was able to get into some higher level projects.
Okay, awesome.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, so here's another part too. Obviously in college, like career counselors are very good to be able to guide a career path. And I've seen different career paths. And typically what I saw in larger companies was Do you want to go on a management type of career track, or do you want to stay on a technical? And so a technical would end at an individual contributor level, going up maybe from an analyst and then into a specialist and then into some sort of maybe engineering role and then into more of a practitioner role that has an expertise level to it. And then it goes all the way up to what we call a fellow or a senior fellow. And at that point, you're writing books and you're industry known and you're doing all these cool things. And on the other side of that, there is the management role. And you just basically start out, and then maybe after a while, you're a supervisor over a team, and then you become a manager, then a senior manager, and then a director, and then so forth, a VP, and on up. It's kind of weird. As I talk about this, I was never really any of those middle layers. I don't know that how that happened either. I was basically an individual contributor that led projects among different business units, multiple business units. And I gathered all of these people together on a project base. So this is kind of the third approach, which I find is pretty awesome, because if you find something that's going to help your company, obviously make money. You're not in the business to be a hobby. And so you can show the value of doing a particular project, but then it's going to need resources, money, time investment, and other things. And so if you're able to show the return on investment, you gather all of these team members together, you get the acceptance of this project at the high level, the stakeholder level, and then you get the management commitment of their managers, and you get the time available, making sure that they're available, the resources are available, the people resources are available to work on the project. And then you put it all together in project management and you state the end goal and the different milestones and different things like that. That's a lot of project management, I guess, speak. And you can have, obviously, a project manager that is specialized in helping you with that. However, that's kind of the idea, and that's working across different multiple business segments to be able to combine people and departments together in order to do business development and develop a new maybe business category or service or product. That's pretty exciting. And that's kind of how I got to where I am at now, is being able to build that expertise from learning and observing from all these different departments, being able to gather them together, and then being able to build business products and new product, and obviously in security products and services, SaaS services, to be able to then share that knowledge to do it again and again and again. Really, through Federal Cloud, that was kind of a blueprint that I used for quite a few years. Then also understanding, like, wow, I learned nearly all the domains of security. So I went into being a CISO from there. And that brings its own challenges, but you learn, you're able to be agile enough through those previous experiences to then learn how to navigate and to learn more of the people skills part of it, working with investors on showing them reports of, here's an assessment of our security state right now. And I've worked with my teams and we've gathered this information. Here's different things based on risk and a lot of technical facts behind it that you don't really show the business people. They're not as concerned with that. They want to learn the business impact. So you translate that into business impact and you say, okay, based on this and talking to the other personnel in the C-suites, based on what we're seeing, here's where we should focus our efforts. And so then you work back with your team, you figure out technical solutions, and you're able to remediate those items, and you're able to show that you've lowered the risk in a particular area. So then it becomes more strategic plus tactical, because you're blending both of those together.
Yeah,
hopefully that helps.
No, that helps. Yeah. It also seems like there's pretty important, from what I got from you, that it's pretty important that you're able to blend technical problems and be able to turn them into business framing and be able to present those to the other parts of the company. Because realistically, all businesses are there to make money. Cybersecurity, being able to transfer technical problems into business framing seems like a great way to be able to get done what you'd like and to show like tangible results.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the business wants to know. Like, where could this thing hurt me? Where could we be out of business? Where's something catastrophic? And then where do we keep our customers happy with our own compliances that relate to their compliances so that they're happy? And then also, where are we actively looking at risk in order to make sure that we're doing better than our competitors in our industry? And we can show that. It's a differentiator when it comes to sales. I've been on a lot of calls and a lot of things that we actively pursue and that we target as initiatives. That's what helps set us apart when we're looking at customer prospects and also keeping our existing customers happy.
So I got to ask a question here, and that is simply, what, Eric, if this was you looking for bringing someone on board, what would you be looking for?
Yeah, and that's a great question, Maurice. And it's not always the technical items. It's the ability to want to solve problems, how you go about solving problems. And I think security people and a lot of technical people just like puzzles and they like to figure them out. And so it's that kind of creative process, being very intrigued by problem and how you're able to solve that problem and not really looking at it like, wow, this is super hard, but like, okay, I can figure out how to chip away at this and figure it out and then ask other people, collaborate, and be able to have that type of mindset to work as a team member that can bring their own unique skills and problem solving ability into it. So I've actually trained people who at first they said, well, I'm not super technical. And then I look at them and I say, well, what are you doing? And it comes, you know, come to find out that they actually were pretty technical. Right. They weren't exactly technical in what we were doing, but many times they were helping us on projects, like it might be compliance. And so they would help us get through some pretty intense times to be able to meet compliance deadlines as members of other technical teams. And so they wanted to work on our team. And so I asked them what they were interested in, and they ended up being some of the best team members because they were very excited about learning more. And that's one of the things that I like to do is just ask people like, okay, here's the thing that we need to do. What do you eventually want to do? And then figure out a way to train them and have them grow into that. And then we can always backfill and find someone else to do what they were originally doing. And I find out through HR, like that succession planning, we were doing that also on a previous discussion that we had about business continuity, being able to cross-train multiple people to be able to do a function. And so it helps with a lot of things, but also it helps with career development because you've really got to be able to share with your management what you want to do and what you feel like you're good at doing or where you can contribute, and then figuring out a way to guide that person into that type of role.
Yeah. On that note, another one of the questions I had was, once you do get into these like entry-level positions where maybe you're now a SOC analyst or you're on like a team in like a lower position, how do you posture yourself, or like what can you focus on? What can you project to show that you want like to be a more central role in the on a team or in a company? How can you show that you want more than just the role you're at so that you can progress in a career?
Yeah, I think it starts out, that's a great question. And I think it starts out with just being able to understand what is required for that particular role and making sure that you're fulfilling it and that you're able to do it like over and over again consistently, and being able to document things. Like, let's say there's a ticket open and it says, okay, here is a problem with a system and it wasn't connecting to this other system or person able to connect to this, and we've got to figure out how to solve it. And so you're working on that, and then you're able to solve it, but then also you document it clearly. You're able to communicate that as kind of a problem management step, saying, oh, hey, we might see a lot of these other things. And so that helps with visibility, because then the people, maybe not only your own organization, but other people in organizations next to you, will see that you're really helping out, trying to solve business problems. So then that feedback will come back into your team management that you're wanting to really help the business and basically keep it safe. I think that that helps a lot. And so if you're able to consistently do that, but then also, like I mentioned earlier, being able to volunteer for other projects. Like if you see other people, and again, pending that you've got time available, you okay it with your management, saying, okay, look, I'm doing this. It's taking about 85% of my time. I've got about 15% other time that I feel this will help our company. If I'm able to solve this security problem for this other team or this other project, you get the approval. but then you're able to learn new things and new skills. That becomes very valuable for an individual to then grow.
Yeah, that working on other projects in like other groups seems like a very good way to learn from their group and kind of learn what they're doing, and also give you more visibility company-wide. So if you need to make like a change or something along the path, you have good connections all over the company, and you also have good skills in being a well-rounded individual. So that's great advice. Thank you.
Certainly. Also, we used to call this something, it was in order to make good rapport with the other groups, because a lot of times security is seen as the department of no, like, no, you guys cannot do this. And so it's very justified by the other departments, because they just want to be able to go fast and do things and not be slowed down. And so in order to enable departments to do this, you want to show them how to do it fast, how they would, but be able to do it correctly with, maybe some people call it the guardrails. I would like to say just doing it the proper way, but then also showing them how to enhance that and give them some advice, or from previous experience, showing previous knowledge on how to do something, and that it will actually help them do it better. We used to call this security plug, because it would add that value, and then you would be a trusted advisor from those other departments. So that would build a better rapport between yourself and those departments, and they would trust you that you're wanting to help them enable their business.
Yeah, I like how you phrased that at the end, like helping enable business instead of just being the group of no. So with cybersecurity generally being seen as like an adversarial role, it's very important to make sure that we all we work together, and that we can also project that we're part of the team, and we want to push forward business initiatives just as bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point too, because really when you're doing planning, and a lot of times the personnel that are starting out don't see this, but the people that are doing the planning, like at the C-level or even director level, they're aligning to business objectives. So they have their own objectives that roll up to those that are a part of it. And so they complete their part. And so you build your own objectives that support those business objectives. And then you have individual personnel who are in charge of parts of that. And then you are able to observe those parts to see if they're working well. And then you make adjustments and fine tuning as needed. But really that goal is then to communicate back those results that show that you're supporting the business. And then when you're doing that effectively, then you are seen as a trusted department and not the department of no.
I'm sorry, I was on mute, but the department of no, that was hilarious. Well, I've got to ask you, Dylan, too, what are some of the things that your fellow classmates have been worried about? Not just finding a job, but just general overall, and what you're seeing as you're learning from different mm-hmm. classes and experiences after internships, and any other types of highlights that might be helpful for Eric to address.
Yeah, I know we're going to hit a bit of a buzz topic, but with the advent of AI, it's definitely revolutionized cybersecurity a lot already, and it will continue to do so. There are definitely different programs that utilize it pretty heavily already, and there's a lot of ways that are helping with detecting phishing and stuff like that. But I wanted to ask about, with the advent of AI, what do you foresee being a major, I guess it's probably changing what is wanted out of a potential candidate for a job because of how AI is being utilized in the field. So I was wondering, how does that affect your hiring process looking at that? Because I've actually seen a couple job postings that specifically wanted over a year experience as a prompt engineer, which I thought was pretty interesting, because like actually adding that to the job listing was, I feel like, the first step of many things to come when it comes to being able to utilize AI effectively. So what are your thoughts on that?
Certainly. So AI is going to obviously change so much in hiring, especially for security. But yes, every security practitioner or person that's looking to get a role should be very involved with AI to a certain level, and also to understand how their business is using AI, because it does fall into general security. Because when you're sending information into a prompt, you're sending it outside your own company, beyond your control of the data. And so just understanding that, bringing that under regular IT security data governance, and understanding what type of things you're sending it to, do you trust where you're sending it? But then also understanding things like OWASP top 10 for AI, things like prompt injections. I have a friend that is working on that committee. And so these are really big things. So if you think about it, and you've got a business unit that's sending things that are scripted into these, and someone else as an attacker is changing the information when it's going over there and you're getting different information back, then you've lost the integrity of the data and you're getting wrong information, basically. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's good. Now, 1 year experience is kind of interesting because OpenAI, as of this time, has been around open to the public for like about a year and 2 months or 3 months. And so that's interesting in itself. I actually was able to work with AI and it was pretty good back in 2017 with IBM. And we saw some really awesome things. It wasn't really super open. It actually was open if you became a subscriber, which you could, but not a lot of people knew about it. And it was pretty cool. But with what's happening with a lot of the newer platforms, it's really exponentially advanced. And so you can do a lot of things. I use it to do a lot of, I guess, automation type activities, but then I watch it really closely. I call it more assistive intelligence because I can't rely on it. It's non-deterministic. You might get different answers all the time and it has hallucinations and different things like that. And so I watch it really closely and I try to understand what I'm sending it. And usually I just use it as a second opinion. I'll think, I already know in my mind what this does, but it will typically give me more details. And then when I get an answer back, I'll say, okay, that's an interesting viewpoint. And then I might take little bits of it and then form my own opinion and modify it until I like it. But that's just for my own usage. However, looking at the way a company uses it, that's really where you put your security hat on and you understand data flows and integrity of data, confidentiality, of course, mm-hmm. different things like that. And then also ensuring that there is a governance around it and that the company is going through that governance with policies and people aren't going around it. And then also, I guess another step is third parties, asking third parties how they're using AI and if they're using any of your data. So it can be quite a complex and tangled web of different parts of data.
Yeah, it made me chuckle too when I saw that job listing it was like wanted this level of prompt engineer experience, and it wasn't even popularized that long ago when it was posted, but interesting posts.
You'll see all sorts of things like that, which are, I guess when you're applying for jobs, and I've seen this, there will be a lot of things that people are asking for, but really the best way to do it is just to explain the experience that you have done and how it relates, and also researching the companies that you're applying for mm-hmm. and understanding their market and understanding their competitors and really analyzing that and saying, okay, I can be an impact in your company because I see that your goal is to do X, Y, and Z. And I have experience doing these things, which are very relative to those. And here's how I think that this can help you in specific examples. And I think that's really the best way to go about it. But you will see all sorts of requests from saying, yeah, we want 10 years of AI experience where, yeah, some people might have that, not a lot of people, but definitely you want to have that on your resume of working with, whether it's OpenAI or something else.
So I've got to ask this one, and that is simply is from an HR standpoint, and that is, where have you seen people absolutely blow it on their interviews?
So I would say probably people who don't really do enough research about the company or the market that it's in, and just that they're there to explain what they've done rather than how they can help the company. And what that specific role, because you read a requisition and the requisition tells you, usually in bulleted points, what they want. What I've seen is you'll have the top half with a couple paragraphs of what the company does. And then the hiring manager below that puts bulleted points of what they want for this particular role, because that's why they're hiring somebody. That's why they got the justification and the budget to be able to hire somebody, saying, wow, we have a need for this. We really need to get somebody hired for it. We need to find somebody with experience. And so really, if you look at that requisition and you understand what's required and you're able to explain your own history of what you've done that relates to that, but really, if you can think of questions after taking a bit of time to analyze, wondering more about that company of how you could really help, you'll want to have your own ideas, but then drawing those questions from the person interviewing, because they will appreciate that. because they know you're interested in helping their company. And they know that you're interested in helping be a big impact for that role. And so that way, from the manager's point of view, they think, okay, I'm not just hiring somebody who just wants a job. I want somebody that really is going to make a big impact and be able to do great in this particular role and progress and possibly grow within the company. So that's what you want to see.
That makes a lot of sense. From students that are still in that search for a job, Dylan, I would hope that if there are any other questions that come to mind, that you would let us know and maybe have a follow-up with some other students. I think the more information that you have as you get ready for the workforce is going to be a differentiator to the people that you'll be interviewing with. But Dylan, thank you for joining us.
And you need to come back because we need to know how your MMA match went.
Yes.
So you need to let us know.
Fair enough. Awesome. Of course, thank you so much for having me, guys, too. It was a pleasure, and I feel like I learned a lot and was able to get a lot out of this. So thank you.